Welcome to New Lens with Comgood Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Comgood Capital, and I am here with Jeff Schinneberger, who is the founder and executive director of Plywood People out of Atlanta. It's a nonprofit and co-working space leading a community of startups doing good. I had the pleasure of meeting Jeff a couple of times and then actually attended Plywood Presents, I think a couple years ago. So I'm really looking forward to getting to know your story a little bit, what makes you tick, and then just hear some of your thoughts around capital and stewardship. So Jeff, thanks for joining us.
So good to be here. It's interesting thinking about who listens to this already. There's huge opportunities for people to use whatever they have been given to help others, educate others. And so this is a great use of time and energy. I love it.
Well, do this. Start off, give us a little background so we can understand your story. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? And then a little about your career.
I grew up in Michigan. I was a pastor's kid. My dad was one of the first assistant pastors to a leadership guru named John Maxwell.
Oh, yes.
So I knew John when I was 1 year old. So growing up, I was super engaged in kind of the leadership spectrum of the world. My dad would give me $10 a book, me and my sisters. He would come back from a leadership conference. He'd give us a box of books. He'd say, for every book you read, I'll give you $10. You have to read the book. You have to highlight it and do a one-page synopsis of the book. So we would do that. I mean, probably starting in about like fifth grade. And I didn't know that I was becoming like this leadership guy early on, knowing all this motivational thing, Zig Ziglar, John Maxwell, and Ken Blanchard, and all these people. But then what I realized is my dad never read the books. He would just use our Cliff Notes basically and integrate them into his sermons. So it was kind of cheap child labor. I don't know if you can say that, but we were part of his plans. So early on, I started doing that. I would go with him periodically and these conferences, and John Maxwell would sit up front. He said, there's a kid in the back, you know, where we sell books. And he'd say, if you have any leadership questions, just ask him. He's got all these books. And I would point people to the right direction. So all that to say, I early on was involved in leadership conferences. I led a massive young leaders event called Catalyst, which was a next generation leadership conference. I led it for years. I was the creative director and did all kinds of crazy things through that conference. From there, I kind of launched into a faith-based project called Q and helped co-found that. And
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So that was a really interesting experience. Learned a ton through all those gatherings and ultimately landed on a real passion for helping people get their ideas off the ground and get them sustaining. And probably because I had so many ideas as a young leader and people supported me and found a home in Atlanta. Atlanta was a place where people believed in my ideas and supported me. So we started Plywood People, I guess, 13 years ago, and now I've been leading it ever since. So that's the quick version of it.
Give us just a little snippet of what Plywood People is, are, does, whatever.
I'll kind of give you a background. I had started this little project called Gift Card Giver, and people in your world would know, I mean, the gift card industry is just massive, right? And so I had this theory that everyone had a gift card in their purse or their wallet that's been sitting there for like a year. So I tested it out at a wedding reception one time. I asked complete strangers if they had a gift card. They ended up all giving me their gift cards that day. And I promised I would give them to someone in need. So it quickly started with this little project called Gift Card Giver. At that time, it was like when Facebook was just starting. We created a page on Facebook and people started sharing it. Next thing you know, we started getting gift cards from all over the nation. CNN did a story on it. Huh. Atlanta Journal-Constitution, all these, like, we had 23 national stories in the first 6 months of this little,
oh my gosh,
funny project. And the reason why I say that, it's not because like that was the goal. It was just like we started giving away money through gift cards. And because of that project, people started connecting with me and they would say, hey, Jeff, you started this project. I have this passion. I have this dream. I see this injustice in the world, a problem I'm trying to address. Can you give me some advice? And all those people, none of them had any money. So I would say, sure. Yeah. Let's grab coffee, a drink. Let's go to lunch. And my assistant noticed at that time that I was buying everybody's lunch. You know, it's like, this is not a sustainable way to do this anyway. So it happened over and over and over again. And so we decided to get everyone together for one day. And this was again, 13 years ago. hosted a little event that we called Plywood Presents. And there's a little over 100 people that came to that first one. And everyone said, what's next? And that event, we had some stories. There's the founder of King of Pops, a friend of mine, Stephen Kars, a woman that had started a soccer program in a refugee community. Mm. And then this guy named Scott Belsky, who wrote an amazing book called Making Ideas Happen. Super inspiring for people who are walking out the door. What's next, Jeff? What's next? I was like, that was the plan. That was all I had. That was it.
That was it. Yep.
But then we were like, wow, there's a, you know, sometimes like you start something and then you go, maybe I'm responsible for this. No, that's healthy. And sometimes it's unhealthy. I mean, sometimes your responsibility outweighs what you can handle. But in that moment, it's like, wow, I need to do something to support these people. And that's when we really filed a 501c3 and started asking people to join in this work of creating training for startup projects, sometimes nonprofits, sometimes social enterprises. So we have a training program we call the Plywood Process, where we have a 6-week online program. We have a boot camp kind of experience called Foundations. And then we have groups that meet monthly that we call Layers. So started there, and we started realizing the more we interacted with projects, the more successful they got. So we started a co-working space, and now we have a beautiful building in the West End of Atlanta that we call Plywood Place. So we have all these different programs, events, and training that we do.
I could ask 100 questions about Plywood People, but I want to stay focused on you. So I may come back to that. I don't know how old you are. Doesn't really matter. Let's just say you're halfway through your career or somewhere around that. So how would you best describe who you are in the context of kind of where you're at in your life journey? So whether that's Plywood People or not, who are you today in the context of where you're at in your life journey?
What's interesting is because I've seen so many projects, I've seen so many ideas. Some of those have been successful. Many of them haven't worked. And I don't know what other people say about me, but I think for me, how I would explain where I'm at right now is I can oftentimes see the problems that exist in projects a little quicker than the average person. So there may be a passion, there may be a purpose that someone has, and they come and they present it to me, and I might have seen something similar. So I've seen how it succeeded or didn't succeed. So I can pinpoint the potential challenges that they're going to have. I have social entrepreneurial projects. I've written books. I've done all that kind of stuff. But at the end, like, I've seen 1,000 projects and I can speak into it. The other thing that I have kind of a unique ability to do is connect other people that can help those projects.
Got it.
It's interesting. There's a lot of entrepreneurial people that don't stick with things very long. And I've stuck with this for a long time, which immediately creates trust. So if I were to call you, Jeff, and I'm like, Jeff, hey, there's this project that I think you can help, I'm guessing you would call me back, right? That's a gift. That's something that, because of longevity, I've been doing this, that they know if I call them or text them or whatever, this is something you need to consider. Most people would say, all right, yeah, let's make that happen.
Which is extremely valuable. Well, in life in general, one question along those lines that I'm curious about is, what do you tell an entrepreneur? They've been doing this for 3 to 5 years and they have the natural highs and lows. What do you tell somebody? How do you control those emotions of, gosh, this is the best idea, or man, I'm crazy for even thinking this?
Well, most people give up in the first 2 years, honestly. One thing we've realized through our community, if someone's trying to solve a problem in some way, if they don't have a personal connection in some way to that problem, they will give up in the first 2 years. I can't say it's 100%, but pretty sure it's about 100% of the people don't make it. If it's not part of their story in some way, if they don't have a personal connection, if they haven't personally been impacted by it, why? Because like their partner is like, we need to make money at some point,
right?
Or they start realizing that it's not working. You're like, I need to go get a job. So that's, I would say, the bigger linchpin is like, is it actually part of your sense of purpose? Or is there something deeper within you that you have a sense that you need to continue this? That's usually a turning point, I would say, for the projects that sustain or don't.
Well, how would you describe the connection to that entrepreneur who does have that connection to their cause or to what they're doing? Obviously, it gives them fortitude. How else does it help them? Do you see a higher success rate when that happens? And what makes it different? Is it just because they're sticking to it?
I'm finding more and more success is very, it's actually a subjective word to define.
Success.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So me, I like come from, again, you heard my story. Like I come from this leadership, motivational background. So success for me equals numbers and quantity and
sure.
all that kind of stuff, which I'm guessing a lot of the listeners on this, they're thinking financial success,
right.
they're thinking number, you know. And so sometimes people get mad at me, I would say, because I'm like pushing them to grow. But there's an incredible project right now that we're working with that has a woman that was super involved in Airbnb early on. And she bought this farm and she's creating this sustainable place. Mm. And I'm like, how do we get more people to see this? I'm pushing her like crazy.
Yep.
She's like, well, I kind of like the pace we're going here. You know, part of it, I think for me as a leader and as a person that cares for a community is I have to understand what success is.
Right. Me,
and then encourage that and be in support of that. And that's not always easy, you know, because and I think all of us instinctively know this. More does not equal better in every scenario. It doesn't. Right.
Right.
Because the flip side is more can often lead. And this could be personal to people listening. More can lead to an unsustainable marriage. Rockefeller asked this question years and years and years ago. He said, what is enough? And his answer was a little bit more, yeah. right? Isn't that the crux of the tension of being a financial planner? All these things, like it doesn't solve problems. Money does not solve all those issues. So anyway, success is actually a question that we have to really ponder individually. And then I, as a person that's like supporting people, I have to kind of go, okay, this is their version of success. How do I encourage that? Where do I find myself in the midst of that?
Yeah, it's one of the narratives that I think I've been called to ask and challenge in the financial world is, I don't word this in the context of defining success, but that's really what it is, because there are parts of this that are really healthy. There are parts that are not of this American dream. You know, everybody thinks you get that white picket fence and all that kind of stuff. And you start to go, not necessarily. And in fact, if anything, I have watched, and I'm sure you have too, money just can oftentimes get more problems. So unless you know how to steward that well, it actually can eat you up. And I've seen plenty of examples of that.
I have other friends that are financial planners, and it's like, so what does your job really entail? And oftentimes when you really get down to it, they're like, it's funny. We do a lot of marriage counseling and yeah. these financial decisions that people are like, they come in and they have different perspectives. It's also interesting. I was writing this morning about this personally, because I think as someone that is a creative person, what's frustrating the most is the things that I have done that I think are the greatest creations I've ever done are not seen by as many people as I wanted to see them.
Yep.
And so then the question I ask is, does that make it less valuable, or does that make it less important or not as good? So then I start tending to start writing things or creating things that I think will have a quantitative success. But is that what the world really needs from me? Is that going to help make the world better to appease what people already think is good? Or is it more important for me to actually write and create and make things for other people to consume that makes the world actually different? That's the tension. Now, granted, artists have dealt with this forever, where do you make art to sell or art that's beauty, right? Like that's the tension we have. But I think for me, it's like, you have to be able to eat, number one, right?
Yep.
And you also want to say something that makes people live differently. Because I think we can all agree that the world is not perfect right now.
Yeah. And let's be clear, it never has been.
Never has been.
Right. You bring up this idea, when in a business plan, do you ever see somebody say, I actually think growth is going to be down 20% and I'm going to plan accordingly? Like rarely do you see that in a strategic plan. I mean, you might see it in a 12-month whatever. And in fact, if you think about Wall Street, and I'm not here to ping on Wall Street, but the whole narrative is growth. And as soon as you don't have growth, your valuation gets hammered. And to your point, sometimes growth is probably not the only metric you should be looking at.
Right. I think in 2006 to 2008, I think we should have learned from that, right? We should have. Now, I hate using the word should, but I think in that scenario, I think I can. The only thing we're looking at is the bottom line. Meanwhile, we're putting a bunch of money into people that have no character. And I think the world, all of us are starting to ask a few more questions to kind of go, if we do have money, if we do have time, whatever capital that we do have,
yeah.
don't we want to invest it in things that are a little bit better? The return might not always be as good. but maybe the return has a bigger impact than just the bottom line.
This is exactly the message that I'm trying to communicate, bring dialogue about. And in fact, if you think about the financial world, I'm sure you've heard the terminology. In our space, it's you have a fiduciary responsibility. And it means a lot of things. But at the end of the day, I think what it really means is you're maximizing your return, the least amount of risk. And you start to go, wait, that's nothing wrong with that paradigm. But I'm not so sure my ultimate paradigm for my portfolio today is simply getting the highest rate of return, the least amount of risk. There are other things, like you just said, if I can use my capital to make the world a better place, to connect with that, I'm willing to do that. And it's challenging the paradigm that's out there right now, which is why what I'm doing is not a simple process.
You know, on a public standpoint right now that people are debating this is in golf. This is a huge debate people are having. And I'm not going to say I have an opinion on it, but it's very public that these professional golfers are joining a new golf league or whatever you want to call it, network, professional thing that is funded by a person that is in contrast to certain visions of America, right? And so then it's become this real political thing. I think at the end of the day, if you have money that you want to invest in something and it's personal, it's not just a spreadsheet, you want to know about the character of the leader of that entity. And you want to know that they're going to make decisions that are good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes we do make decisions because you kind of separate yourself and you do look at a spreadsheet. But at the end of the day, I think most of us would say we want to support things and people that have good character because they're going to make better decisions than ones that don't.
Yeah. And one of the things that I have experienced and talk about is when you do that. So when you actually take some time and analyze it, first, you got to figure out what is your value set. And then you want to try to find others that align with that value set. To me, there's an interesting thing that happens. And most people talk about how that capital impacts others, which is still hugely important. I'm actually very intrigued that when you invest this way, it changes the heart and psyche of the investor. And there's real power in that. I mean, we've been investing this way for the last 8 years, my wife and I. And I would say, I actually have had joy and freedom when I invest in certain things that I care about. And yeah, I'm risking my capital just like I am in any other investment.
Totally.
So I think there's some really cool stuff there. Well, let me keep going here.
All your listeners are like, this guy, I can't stand this guy. This Schoenebarger guy, he can't.
No. How are you trying to change the world?
It's an interesting question. I've thought a little bit about like when I die, what would people say about me?
Yeah.
Which is interesting. I don't know if anyone's ever asked me this in an interview. I hope that all these people that I've interacted with over the years would someday, I don't know, I just see them coming up to my wife over and over and over again going, I remember this conversation I had with Jeff and he made me see things differently in some way. Doesn't mean that they always agreed with me, but I was willing to have a hard conversation with them for the sake of their lives, for the sake of their marriages, and for the sake of all of our communities. And I hope people in the end, they could see that in something that I contributed.
Which is kind of interesting because I'd argue, first of all, that's wonderful. I'd almost argue that in today's world, having that person that cares enough to encourage, inspire, and challenge, like the world doesn't want to be challenged today. It's just go around affirming everybody. So it's interesting that you bring that up because I actually think we need more of those real dialogues. And real dialogues can be just as much as, man, I love you. You're doing a great job as, dude, you got to work on this over here. This is a blind spot you have. Do you think that that's accepted today?
Some people like it and some people don't. So there's an ancient, I could maybe explain it as a personality test, not really that, but it's this thing that educates people about themselves. And it's called the Enneagram.
Oh, yes.
Which I'm sure that might be new for a lot of your audience, but it's old. And it tells you a lot about yourself. It told me a lot about myself. I am what's called an 8 on the Enneagram, which is called a challenger. So it's built into who I am. But what's interesting is I have this wing, this part of me that's also a peacemaker. So like today I can get off the call with you and be like, Jeff, you need to do this differently and yada, yada, yada. And you might take it, you might not. Either way, I'll feel bad about it 2 hours later because I just caused like this tension. And I don't always like that about me. And my closest friends are like, no, Jeff, the world needs this from you. Because most people aren't willing to say the thing that actually needs to be said. And it's like, if I had a friend that was in a long-term relationship and they weren't encouraging to that person, they were cheating on that person, whatever, and I knew that and I didn't talk to them about it, I think I'd feel worse about that. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. I mean, sometimes that's internal as a team. Those are sometimes the hardest parts. Sometimes it's the closest friend. But like, I had a friend one time and I saw that they were doing this thing with their business. I've been pretty involved in their work and I hadn't talked to them in a few months. And I saw this thing announced on their Instagram, like something's not right. So I called them and I was like, hey, can we get coffee and talk about something I noticed? And we sat down and talked and it was like, I noticed this one little thing. And she was like, how did you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I don't know, but that's part of my responsibility. That's who I am. And it's what I can contribute to this world. I mean, I lead a nonprofit. I don't have a ton of money. I'm richer than some and poorer than most, mm-hmm. right? But the capital that I have is something that is different than everybody else's. And I have to use that and contribute it to their work. For me, that's the stewardship that I have to give.
And so while you bring that up, my next two questions is, and maybe you've already answered it here, is when did you realize the power of capital and what does that mean to you?
Well, the first time I realized I had that gift a little bit, and I'll answer this too, was in college. My roommate in college, his name was Wes. Wes sat me down one day. He was so mad at me. I was like, why are you so mad? And he was like, why do you always do this thing? I was like, what thing? And he's like, we're at dinner and you determine the direction of the conversation. He's like, if you decide you want it to be funny, then you start telling jokes. And then all of a sudden you'll change the tone and ask some serious question. He's like, he was pissed at me because he was with this girl he was trying to get to know. And he's like, I wanted to control the conversation with this girl, not you, you know. And I had no clue what I was just doing it, you know.
Right.
So he kind of alerted me to something that was within me. And so I think about that in relation to what I've been given and what my responsibility is. I mean, capital, there's different types of capital we usually kind of talk about. There's financial capital, that's what everyone usually knows. There's intellectual capital, that's the experiences and knowledge that you've been given and what you're supposed to do with that. And then there's social capital, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm really rich in social capital and probably intellectual capital. And you all listening have way more money than me. So I need people like you to invest yeah. in my social capital. So anyway,
right.
And so once I started kind of acknowledging those things, it became really important. I mean, I have a lot of friends that have a lot of money that don't have access to the people that they need to know to support. At times, my responsibility is to bring these two people together. And I know the person with money, just by knowing this person that has access to real great social needs, makes their life more full and have greater meaning. And I also know that this person that is addressing social needs, when they get access to some of the resources that this other person can contribute, there can be incredible things that happen. So that's a role that I play.
And then stewardship. What's that mean to you?
Well, I don't use that word a lot. It feels...
What word do you use?
I use generosity. I mean,
okay.
Generosity means to freely give with nothing in return. Let me say it again. Generosity means to freely give with nothing in return. Most of us with financial resources give for a tax incentive.
Okay.
Which is fine. I mean, that's a benefit. But there was a few years ago where there was some talk about maybe discontinuing that. Or limiting that more. And I was like, wow, wouldn't that be interesting if we did get rid of it? Would there still be a flow of generosity? And I don't know that there would be. I mean, that's partially what frustrates me about the foundation world, is because foundations are meant to be funnels to release money, but they end up being buckets to hold money.
Yeah.
So instead of giving whatever it is, the 5% that you have to give every year, what if you gave 6% and how much difference could that mean? Billions of dollars sitting in foundations that are not addressing the social needs that we need them to do. Move the freaking money. Address some of these things. Like, people with their hearts actually want things to change, but with their minds have been telling them you need to hold it for as long as possible. So generosity means to let it go. Generosity means I've been given something and I'm responsible to share it. And when that stuff happens, I think people's lives get more full.
Well, and so just know that while I'm not in the direct line of what you're talking about, I'm trying to get people to open their hands up to all their financial resources, not just the philanthropic side, but also the investable side. Because the problem is on the charitable side, there's only so much capital. Most of the capital is sitting in the investing side. So if we can actually harness that in addition to charitable, then I think there's some really exciting things. So I'm actually very encouraged to where the world is going, because we're starting to recognize the power of capital and trying to put it into things that quote unquote do good. That's a whole nother discussion, is what is good, because I think there's some subjectivity there. Okay, I've got two last questions. And one, actually, I've never done this before, but it's a mutual friend of ours that I reached out to. And I said, I'm interviewing Jeff. Is there anything I should ask? And I will read. He says, ask him what the meaning of life and the secrets of the universe is. But that was an emoji, you know, crying sign. So here was the question. How do you get the community more involved with helping law-abiding ex-prisoners get resources for mental health support?
Wow. Can you say that one more time? I
know. How do you get the community more involved with helping law-abiding ex-prisoners get resources for mental health support? That's just a simple question.
Yeah. I mean, I can't answer that individually, but here's what I will say. Like, whether it's that social issue or another social issue.
Sure.
We have an amazing ability to create environments where we don't see things and see people that are hurting, right? So we create lives with fences to separate ourselves. We drive into our garages. We go in the private gates. We go to places where we don't have to interact with social needs. So if you want more people involved in these types of things, you have to get people to meet people that are different than them. And so if you're listening and you're kind of evaluating your own life and you're like, you know, I haven't seen needs in my community in a month because all of my life has been built around environments where I don't have to see it. Then like go home a different direction tonight. Mm-hmm. Go to a coffee shop in a developing community. Go see something that causes you to have a heart palpitation again. And in the midst of that, you might want to do something about it. So the friend that gave you that question, I mean, I think I know
who you know it
gave
is,
you yeah. that question. We need more people to interact with inmates and to not call them by a category, but to call them by a name. Most people that are against someone, it's because they've never had a human interaction with them. I don't care what the topic is, whether that's someone that is orphaned, someone that's divorced, someone that is gay, someone that is whatever, that's an inmate. It's because they don't have someone that they know by name and they've humanized an issue that they've never really comprehended. And so the more that you have relationship with people, the more you start to really care, you know? And that's the case for me. I mean, for me, I wrote a book years ago called More or Less. And the premise of it was that I have an excess in most of life. And I became aware of that because I had a neighbor that would knock on my door and would want to mow my lawn. His name was Clarence. And Clarence passed away a few years back. But I wrote this in response to my relationship with him. And Clarence made me see the world differently. Mm-hmm. Without his relationship, it opened up way more categories of concern. Because I knew him. I knew him by name. We literally had the same birthday, which I didn't even find out until after he passed away, because he told me like every 3 months it was his birthday, but that was a whole different thing. But like, you know, it was like that relationship caused me to see the world differently. It caused me to see the issue of homelessness in a different way, you know? And we need people in our lives to change how we see the world.
No, that's great. I mean, obviously, you know, I've got a deep passion for those who've been incarcerated, and I have some really good friends who I've met through my visits in the prison system, and they have just as much to offer as my neighbor who's sitting right next to me, whether it's wisdom, whether it's love, whether it's relationship. But I don't think people, they don't have that experience. So that's why on my Redemption 360 side, to me, if I can get people to invest in these men and women who have been in prison, it connects you to them. And in this case, you're actually looking for a return. So it's not just a handout. You're actually rooting for them going, you know, when they succeed, you succeed. And that's a really interesting dynamic. Even makes me think of some stuff in Africa. We just did a webinar on that and we had a number of Africans on. And what they don't like, the perception that America has, is these handouts. Like, they don't want the handouts. They want the dignity of, look at me as a human being. Look at me as a good investment. Look at me and hold me accountable to make this a win-win scenario. And that's not typically how most Americans look at it. It's, oh, let's throw some money over there for some wells or whatever. And these people are like, no. In fact, I didn't even realize that Silicon Valley is really starting to invest in Kenya. Some amazing things are coming out of Kenya from a technology standpoint. So, all right, we have gone long, but it's been wonderful. And just so you know, I'm an eight as well. And it's funny because people think that, and I tend to ask the hard questions, and people think that I actually love that debate or that challenge. And it's, you just said, it's funny. I actually don't love it, but I don't even think I just ask the question. So interesting just to hear you articulate that, because there's some similarities. The last one is, and it's, to me, it's one of the harder questions, and you can leave your, if you want to answer it in a family context, you can, but I'm going to give you some freedom not to, because I know everybody would put their family in there. If you could have one dream come true for your life, what would that be?
You know, it's interesting. I think it's something new I'm pondering. I just got back from Spain and got to experience an amazing creation called Sagrada Familia, which is, I think, the greatest man-made creation ever. And it's this huge cathedral. It's not done. It was started 140 years ago, and it's not completed. It's this incredible.
Are they still working on it?
They're still working on it.
Okay.
They say it should be done within the next 10 years. It's gorgeous. It's amazing, inspiring. And the architect who designed it and started it, he only lived the first 10 years of this project. And now other architects and designers have taken what he's created and enhanced it. So I think if I'm in a healthy place, and I answer you from that standpoint, not out of selfish ambition or personal gain, I think the work that I've done to date, I would hope that whoever comes after me, and that's not to say I'm leaving what I'm doing, but the next phases would only improve on what I've built. I think that's the sign of probably a wise leader and someone that believed deeper in the meaning of what they were doing instead of their personal gain. So like I said, that's my answer today. I'm in a healthy place. I took a month off of work, and I can say that. Like, you asked me 2 months ago, I'd have been like, I want to be a bestseller or something.
Right,
you
know, right.
But that's probably more meaningful in the end.
For yeah. That work. Well, for those who want to learn more about Plywood People, your website is?
Plywoodpeople.com. Everything's there. You can connect with us or connect with me. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Schoenebarger. Good luck trying to spell that, but you can find Plywood People on there.
Well, I will say this morning, I was just looking through it again, and I think your best of, there was, I was listening again, and I'd heard him before. Is it Inky Johnson?
Inky Johnson. Yeah. Amazing.
Actually, if you just want to go get a pick me up, go listen to some of those presentations. And it takes me back to when I was out in Atlanta and at Plywood Presents, and there were some really inspiring speakers that all came from different walks of life. So it was very refreshing to hear from all different types of people. And there was nuggets to be taken away from all of them. So anyways, well, Jeff, thank you for the time to be transparent and to spend with us and to be here and present. Don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And please rate us, review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. So help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on the path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. Jeff, anything you want to say in closing?
The reality is, if your investments, Jeff, into some of these developing communities work, then it will cause other people to keep investing. So my hope would be that those things that you're finding start shaping other people's thinking. I think we're on the track of something different, and it's exciting.
This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.